Of course, Dawn. You do a great job. You really do. I thought apparently I don't want to teach today. I thought, I can shave 15 minutes off this hour and a half by giving it to Helena. That didn't work. that's my confession. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a song. Lulu quoted a few lines from this song in General Healing the other night. And so this is what we're going to do. As soon as I can make my computer do it. Let's see. That's not what I want. Those are the international numbers. There it is.
Smile on your brother.
Okay. How fun was that? It was, it was really cool to see those pictures of Vietnam in the background, and just to hear the beautiful, beautiful lyrics of that song. You know, we're just a moment sunshine. You know, something about while we wait here for the one that left us here until the one that left us here returns for us at last. I mean, the lyrics are just, you hold the key that unlocks the door, all of it. Beautiful. I realized that as I watched that, having a lot of emotion coming up. And Regina said this in her teaching on Sunday. It's like, she's like, Jacqueline's going through some stuff now too. I'm like, oh yeah, she's right. I am. I'm going through some real deep stuff here, and I don't even know what it is. Well, let's just see where we go today. And I didn't know I was going to do this till I heard one of the few words we heard from Helena. I don't even know what it was she said, but it made me pick up from my recycle paper bin over here what I read for Sunday's service, for Regina's service. So I'm going to start with that, the paragraphs that she picked from lesson 132. Frankly, as I watched that Youngblood music video, it just seemed more and more relevant what this lesson has to say. So let me just go ahead and read it. Lesson 132, I loose the world from all I thought it was. What keeps the world in chains but your beliefs? And what can save the world except yourself? I'm going to try and get through this teaching. But, you know, I mean, that's just so, that's exactly what that line was saying, right? It's like, while we wait here for the one who left us here to return to us at last. I mean, this is, I know I garbled that line from the song, but it's the same sentiment. What keeps the world in chains but your beliefs? And what can save the world except yourself? And of course, it's capital S, self. Belief is powerful indeed. The thoughts you hold are mighty, and illusions are as strong in their effects as is the truth. A madman thinks the world he sees is real and does not doubt it. Nor can he be swayed by questioning his thoughts' effects. It is but when their source is raised to question that the hope of freedom comes to him at last. Comes to him at last. And again, I just think that backdrop of seeing the Vietnam and, you know, the war and the insanity of that. I mean, it just shows this just crazy dream we're playing out, and the power of our mind to create just this idiocy, this insanity. And yet, you know, the effects that we seem to experience by letting that play out. A man thinks the world he sees is real and does not doubt it. So we're in a position where we don't have to believe in the reality of that anymore. And that sounds very intellectual. I think what's part of what's going on with me is there's an invitation here to move from an intellectual understanding of the teachings to an experience of the same. So let me read the second paragraph here. Yet is salvation easily achieved? For anyone is free to change his mind, and all his thoughts change with it. Now the source of thought has shifted. For to change your mind means you have changed the source of all ideas you think or ever thought or yet will think. The reminder, we are creating all of the time, whether we're creating the Vietnam War or we're creating this, like Anne was talking about a while ago, this low grade discomfort. We're free to change our minds about it and thus to change the source and the results, right, of those thoughts, the effects, the nature of what we experience. You free the past from what you thought before. You free the future from all ancient thoughts of seeking what you do not want to find. The world is nothing in itself. Your mind must give it meaning. The world is nothing in itself. Your mind must give it meaning. And I think that, that was not one of the things I had underlined. I think that that's really important because my mind desperately wants to find some meaning here. And when I look and can't find meaning, and you know, Anne's poem that she started with a while ago had that same concept. You know, we want to take all these thoughts and make them into something meaningful. These thoughts, these experiences, the things that the eyes see, and make that into some kind of coherent structure. And when I find I'm having difficulty with that, I'm just like, well, the hell with it. I think we said hell was okay, right? Okay. I just want to take my ball and go home. I don't want to play anymore. You know, of course, ego can get a hold of that thought and go, well, we'll just go back to Louisville. We'll just go back and, you know, and we've got enough money and we're comfortable there. And that's where family is. And we get to play golf and go out and drink beer with Connie. And, right? Nice. Of course, I know that's all ridiculous. But yeah, this, and I can see how this relates to Regina's story that I'm going to talk about here in a minute. But, I desperately want to find meaning. And when I ask for that meaning, and I turn to inner wisdom and I scream at inner wisdom and go, give me the meaning, give it to me right now. That's not usually very productive, but I do it anyway. I just feel lost. I feel like there is no source then. Okay, if you're not telling me, if you're not giving me meaning, then none of it means anything. And I don't give a crap about any of it. And, you know, the funny thing about it is that swirl of thoughts is just now becoming conscious to me. It's not like, oh, I just started thinking these things yesterday. Just started hearing them yesterday or this morning. Or this past week. But that fear of meaninglessness, that fear that if I don't imprint some meaning on my thoughts and the events of the crazy world we live in, and if I don't imprint some meaning on that, it truly is meaningless. And, you know, we talk about facing the abyss. This is it. This is the abyss that we're facing. I say we talk about it, you know, that phrase has been used for a long time in terms of man's, humankind's attempt to, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Heads up, they're going to restart. Please don't do that. Oh, shoot. One second, y'all. Sorry. I don't know where it went.
Well, right now we hear you and see you.
Thank you. Okay. Well, it was just a heads up, and it says it will restart outside of active hours. I hope it knows what active hours are. Because I'm active right now. Shoot, nice distraction. Humankind search for meaning. So anyway, that seems to be where I sit. And it's funny because I was thinking about this a little earlier. And I'm like, didn't I deal with this? Haven't I done this? And I know right before I moved out here, I did deal with this. I did encounter this and seemingly work through it. It's up again. It's up again. At that time, I spent a lot of time talking about something about there's no man in the sky with a clipboard making sure that Jacqueline's all right, right? And this is the same thing. It's just coming around a little bit different way. So let me quit. Let me go on. The world is nothing in itself. Your mind must give it meaning, must give it meaning. And what you behold upon it are your wishes, acted out so you can look on them and think them real. Perhaps you think you did not make the world, but came unwillingly to what was made already, hardly waiting for your thoughts to give it meaning. Yet in truth, you found exactly what you looked for when you came. And I can tell you, I don't want to be responsible for the Vietnam War. I don't want to be responsible for the Iran War that may or may not be right around the corner, 120,000 troops, I hear. I don't want to be responsible for that stuff. I don't want to be responsible for genocide, child abuse. What the heck do you mean? I just got here. This is not my fault. And I can tell you that this concept it's just a dream. Don't you worry about it, honey. You're just dreaming. It can be very, very comforting, right? I mean, I think it's just another permutation, frankly, of this. It's not your fault. It was, you know, the fire was already burning when you got here. So it's... I think that the idea that it's a dream can be a panacea, can be a nice little Band-Aid. I'm going to slap on this and not have to worry about it and take responsibility for the world. It says here, however, in truth, you found exactly what you looked for when you came. There is no world apart from what you wish. And herein lies your ultimate release. Change but your mind on what you want to see, and all the world must change accordingly. It's not been my experience. I mean, you know, sometimes stuff gets better, but the wars don't stop. Kids still get beaten and killed by their parents. You know, I don't think that it's any coincidence that we were looking at those tips in General Healing Year One this week, that I got to spend a good long time with all of the depressing stories, only a few of which I included in the tip. News stories, things that are going on in this world. And this tells me I can change my mind and change that. I don't know. It's not been my experience yet. You know, my life has gotten more comfortable over time. There was a time when I didn't want to be here at all. I had it all. I had the job, the house, the car, whatever. I also heard Ann talking about causeless joy this morning. And I had that experience, dadgummit, last week or the week before. I'm like, yeah, I'm just, you know. Floating around in this causeless joy. I don't know why I'm happy. I just am. Well, guess what? This week I'm not. it's all come bubbling up, and it feels more like Anne's coined term, causeless sorrow. But here's what it says. Change but your mind on what you want to see, and all the world must change accordingly. Ideas leave not their source. Ideas leave not their source. You know, as I often say here, there's only one thing going on here. There's one mind, and yes, I get the code, I get the perceptual loop, I get the flow. I mean, all of that, all the teachings, right? I got them all. But I'm not always having a direct experience of that. It's like maybe I get a little taste, but it's not. But it leaves room for doubt for me. Maybe it's impatience. I say it leaves room for doubt. No, I absolutely really believe it. But I sure would like to, you know, shoot, I want it to work like I Dream a Genie, where I just go, you know, and the wars stop. Everybody's happy. Nobody's hungry. Nobody's beaten. But that's not quite how it works, apparently. Because if I could blink it all away, I absolutely would. Change but your mind on what you want to see, and all the world must change accordingly. Ideas leave not their source. This central theme is often stated in the text and must be borne in mind if you would understand the lesson for today. It is not pride which tells you that you made the world you see and that it changes as you change your mind. But it is pride that argues you have come into a world quite separate from yourself, impervious to what you think, and quite apart from what you chance to think it is. There is no world. There is no world. There is no world. This is the central thought the Course attempts to teach. Not everyone is ready to accept it, and each one must go as far as he can let himself be led along the road to truth. He will return and go still farther, or perhaps step back a while and then return again. And when Regina asked me to read, and I read this through the first time, I read There Is No World, and I cried, and it seemed like tears of recognition. You know, just unbidden. It wasn't sorrow. I don't know what it was, frankly. I don't know what it was. I'm sorry, I heard some strange noise in there. Distracted squirrel. There is no world. Not everyone is ready to accept that. But it's interesting, you know, each one must go as far as he can let himself be led along the road to truth. He will return and go still farther, perhaps step back a while and then return again. And, you know, that's where I started, right? This idea is up again. So I'm somewhere in that loop. A lesson earlier repeated once must now be stressed again, for it contains the firm foundation for today's idea. You are as God created you. There is no place, right? There is no world. You are as God created you. There is no place where you can suffer. And no time that can bring change to your eternal state. How can a world of time and place exist if you remain as God created you? I don't know the answers to these questions, folks. I don't know. It sure seems like there's a world. When I look out, it seems very solid. And it kind of seems a little bit like a magician's trick. You know, who was that? The Amazing Kreskin from my youth, you know? Or who was that other guy? Guri Eller, he could bend spoons. Maybe I can bend a spoon, but I can't stop the war. There is no world. You are as God created you. There is no place where you can suffer and no time that can bring change to your eternal state. How can a world of time and place exist if you remain as God created you? What is the lesson for today except another way of saying that to know yourself is the salvation of the world? To free the world from every kind of pain is but to change your mind about yourself. Well, I got, you know, we've been focusing on motivation this past week in gentle healing. And if that doesn't do it for you, nothing will. Don says, and what would be unconditional love? And what would unconditional love be worth if you were only loving the lovely things or beautiful things? Thank you. It wouldn't be unconditional, would it?
There was another part you missed.
I did? Ah, what if you had a dream to be the unconditional love that you are? Helena said, a lucid dream. What if you had a dream to be the unconditional love that you are? And what would be unconditional love? And what would unconditional love be worth if you were only loving the lovely things or beautiful things? It wouldn't be unconditional, would it? It's hard to love war. It's hard to love parents who beat their children to death. I don't love it. Most of the time, I don't love myself. Most of the time. In fact, I wrote in my journal this morning, I hate everything. I was just, you know, grousing a little bit. No, I love you, Don. I hate everything but Don. And Kate and Ann and George and Helena and the rest of you folks. How can a world of time and place exist if you remain as God created you? What is the lesson for today except another way of saying that to know yourself is the salvation of the world? To free the world from every kind of pain is but to change your mind about yourself. So I don't have to change my mind about the world. I have to change my mind about myself because there is no world. It's merely a reflection of my thoughts about myself. I mean, I feel some hope in that. Some it doesn't feel so heavy. I don't feel like, Atlas trying to balance the whole thing. Yeah, Helen says, easier said than done. Yeah. To free the world from every kind of pain, but it's certainly motivation, right? I mean, it's like if I'm looking for some reason to not take my ball and go home, this is it. This is the motivation. I mean, shoot, as Ann said earlier, we're just so adept at tolerating this low level of causeless sorrow that I could continue to tolerate that, you know, and this is all right and I can make do here, and you know, but I cannot let the rest of this continue. I cannot let real suffering and real pain continue. Even if I am willing to tolerate what's in my little corner of the world. To free the world from every kind of pain is but to change your mind about yourself. There is no world apart from your ideas, because ideas leave not their source. And you maintain the world within your mind in thought. Release the world, your real creations. Wait for this release to give you fatherhood, not of illusions, but as God in truth. God shares his fatherhood with you who are his son. For he makes no distinctions in what is himself and what is still himself. There's only one thing going on here. What he creates is not apart from him. And nowhere does the Father end and the Son begin as something separate from him. So that was in my recycle bin, but I think it's got to come out of there, because I think that that deserves more contemplation. I don't know. I wish I could say, and here's how we're going to fix it, y'all. But I can't. I can't. Yeah, I don't even know where to go with that. But thank you for letting me share it with you again. So I'm actually going to change gears now. Maybe. I don't know. It's a change of gears. I'm going to do what I've been tasked to do. And that is to share Regina's story. And I thought, Dawn, was it in the leadership meeting that she shared this story with us? Okay. Yeah.
It wasn't in an email that she shared, but yeah. She didn't allude to all of the facts. I had to read that email, so I kind of know a little bit about it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and maybe she shared it again in a retreat house meeting, but she told me this story and I just listened slack-jawed. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. So I was surprised on Sunday that she just, like you said, just barely alluded to the story and left it for me to tell. So let me tell you Regina's story. It had a big impact apparently on her and had a huge impact on me as well. So here she goes. She says she had the dream of living in a small town in this area of Colorado, in the La Vita area. Since she was 28. And I remember her telling that story about, I think it's the same story about riding down the I-25 with her father and going, I want to live here someday. That may have actually preceded this 28-year-old dream, but the dream that she had when she was 28. But at any rate, she has had the dream of living in this particular area of Colorado since she was 28. She says specifically she dreamed of La Vita since the first time she visited La Vita, which was probably 2011 or 12. So that's the setup. So anyway, so the other day she and Cheryl were taking a walk near the retreat house, minding their own business, and a lady drives up to them, somebody they don't know, some random stranger drives up to them, rolls down her window and says, hey, are you interested in buying my house? Would you like to come see it? So they go look at it. Yeah, they want to go see it. So they go look at it. Regina writes that it was her dream home. Absolutely perfect, she says in her humble opinion. And then she gives us a link to the house. Let me share this with you. I mean, I saw when she showed me the pictures, I was, wow, swept away. That's not it, is it? It's the Youngbloods. Wait a minute. No, don't start playing. It's going to start playing. Sorry, y'all. Pause. Stop that. Cut that out. All right. All right, here are the pictures to the house. All right, you can see the Spanish Peaks in the background. You all see that okay, right? Good. Gorgeous house, gorgeous property, gorgeous views. Look at that. Amazing. Right there in La Vita. Look at that. Wow, right outside the kitchen table. Again, more gorgeous views. Look at that woodwork. Beautiful home. Nice big kitchen. It's very interesting the way it's designed as well. It's a really, really pretty house. I can't tell you which bedroom she had picked, whether it was this one or that one. Gorgeous, gorgeous. And you can see up there in the corner, it said estimated $373,000. I think the asking price was $100,000 less than that. Way below the estimate. Lovely outside area. Just sweet buildings, sweet places to sit. All of it with a fabulous view. Somebody else likes that view. They keep putting it in there. Maybe I'm at the end there. Okay. Gorgeous. So as Regina told us this story and showed those pictures, I'm like, oh my God, how lucky for you. It's beautiful. You get your heart's desire. She notes that although mom and I have a condo, not my mom, her mom, although her mom, her mother and she have a condo in La Vida, Regina's mom is also interested in a house outside of the flood zone and with one more bedroom. She notes the house's asking price was way below the market price, about $100,000, I think. When Regina told her mom about it and showed her the pictures, her mom fell immediately in love and was willing to buy it for the two of them. Her mom just loved it and said, yeah, I'll buy it. Absolutely. Okay. Nice conclusion. She notes that they were very excited about this purchase. and then she told Ron about it. And Ron said that he didn't want to move to La Vida. He didn't want her living there part-time after he retired. He's like, well, I might as well not retire. He wants Regina to be with him. When Regina told her mom what Ron had said, her mom said, well, she didn't want to cause trouble for, you know, she didn't want to come between them, right, by buying this house. And Regina said she checked within then to see what she was to do. And she says she knew immediately that she needed to let this house go. Now, let me remind you the beginning of the story. She's wanted since she was 28 years old to live in this area. It's a beautiful home. You saw the pictures. She and Cheryl were walking down the street minding their own business. This woman pulled up for no reason. I mean, they weren't wearing a sign on their backs that says Regina has a dream of having a house in La Vida. This woman pulled up out of nowhere and offered them the house. Regina's mom says, oh, you like that? Okay, well, let's buy it. Ron not wanting that to happen was merely, and I had a problem with that part of the story, by the way. What do you mean Ron doesn't want it? Who cares what Ron wants, right? yeah, I really had a hard time with that part of the story. Still have a hard time with that part of the story. But let me be clear, because there's clarity in the mind now that it's not about that. I mean, there was something that caused Regina to just double check, is this what I'm to do? And I have no doubt that if her inner wisdom said, yeah, get the house, she just said, sorry, Ron, and got in the house. So it's not about Ron, what Ron wanted. It was about, there was something that said, wait a minute, let's just double check. Let's go within and ask what's to be done. And she said when she did that, she knew immediately that she needed to let the house go. She says, on Monday morning, the owner offered us the house. There was no realtor involved, so the process was a little different. She says she let the owner know that the house was perfect, but they didn't feel it was right for them to buy it right now. She says she was absolutely certain that she was doing the right thing, meaning following her intuition. She says, still, this dream was a very deep dream of mine, and it was my last remaining dream. So I cried for about 30 minutes after letting her know. Regina notes that once she released the emotion, she felt guided to open A Course in Miracles to the page where she had written her first spiritual aspiration right after starting the course. That was on page 15. She didn't know what was in the course, in the text of the course on that page. It turns out it was about the distortion of miracle. And she says principles, but she means impulses. It's about the distortion of miracle impulses. She says, as I read this section, I knew my desire to live in La Vita was a distorted miracle impulse. It was seeking heaven on earth, or heaven in form, instead of heaven. She says, since letting go of this final dream, I have experienced a shift that is difficult to put into words. But my best description is that it is an internal strength commitment to awakening that has arisen that is beyond the person. She says, I feel on track. Clarity is easier, more natural than ever before. It seems like my head will not turn towards distractions. And I don't feel like I'm doing any of this. It has just arisen. She says, for me, the confirmation of the guidance has three parts. One, the intuition to let go of the dream was clear and undeniable. Two, the guidance to the distortion of miracle impulses section in A Course in Miracles was the clear explanation of why this dream had to be let go. And three, the shift that has occurred in me is the miracle that I received as a result of choosing to follow this guidance. And then she gives this final comment. Peace Pilgrim said that the ego knows the weakest spot in your armor. I already knew that the ego would use our weak spots to terrify us as an attempt to stop us on this spiritual path. Now I realize it will also use our dreams, which are also weak spots, to entice us away from the spiritual path. She says, I think in response to what I wrote, I had sent her my contemplation of this after she told us the story. She says, and yes, we create with our ego. The world is proof of that. So let me just tell you my reaction was beyond who cares what Ron thinks. I was very upset, very, very upset with this because I mean, how the heck else do you know when you're on track? If, you know, shoot, what we just read from 132, from lesson 132 was change your mind. And you'll see the world change, right? All your dreams come true, don't they? I mean, it's always, and I've talked about it in terms of it being, the happy dream. Exactly, Dawn. And I've talked about it in terms of it feeling like it's the universe winking at you going, yeah, you keep it up. You're doing good, right? So wait a minute, you're going to take that away? What the heck? Where the heck do you expect me to stand? You can't take that. And I'm not talking to Regina, of course. I'm talking to the universe. You mean I can't even use the world manifestations of good dreams to show me I'm on the right track? Then I have no, I don't know where I am on this map. What do I do with that? And as I look, I see that, there have been many, many times when I've gone, oh, this is guidance. Oh, yeah, this is definitely guidance. wrong, you know, because I'm trying to do that. And I was going to say read the tea leaves, and I realized that that's part of what my contemplation is. So there's so I'm going to read you my contemplation. Let's see where this goes. The first was about the there is no world, and the second is about this Regina's experience. So I said, I cried when I read these words a little while ago. There is no world. What does this mean? What would you have me see in this or in me that I am not seeing? And the response, it means simply that you are not who you think you are. Continuing to believe that you are the tiny character called Jacqueline is impeding your progress on the journey with me. When I ask you to lay down your belief in the character, I realize that this will seem difficult to do. However, you must walk through your beliefs like you would walk through a wall of illusory fire, like you walk through a funhouse on Halloween. When I tell you you do not know what to expect, do your best to believe that statement. Your evaluations of the world you live in are just like your evaluations of yourself. I tell you there is no world. You must begin to act as if this is true. Gosh, I see it. I mean, I see that, and I write a little bit about this too, but I see that, you know, it's just the flip side of the coin. Want the world to confirm I'm on the right path. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm at a loss for words. I tell you, there is no world. You must begin to act as if this is true. You know, not just when it's convenient. Not just when things are going in my favor. That's a fundamental principle, right? That's the goal, the whole course, that whatever it is, 1,200 pages of the course that I've been studying for 30 years has been trying to tell me all this time. There is no world. You must begin to act as if this is true. And then it said, yes, a la Indiana Jones. You know, that y'all know the scene where he's facing that chasm, trying to get to the other side. And it says, just take a leap of faith, you know, one step. And he does. He puts his foot down. And there's a solid foundation under it. The invisible bridge. Yeah. And I appreciate the word solid foundation, because that's what I was whining about. You can't take this. You take away my foundation. I tell you, there is no world. You must begin to act as if this is true. Yes, a la Indiana Jones. You still rely heavily upon cause and effect relationships, though I tell you there is but one cause. You, in truth, and one effect, the world and all it contains. You must let go of the belief that you are at the mercy of the world's rules and laws. I like that. I just want to tweak them a little bit. You know, I mean, I want to work within those like confines and like, you know, fix a little bit. So much like you make a legal argument, right? Like, no, this is why it works out in my favor. This whole thing here supports what I've been arguing. But it doesn't. It's still looking at illusion. It's still looking at illusion to verify my truth. I mean, that's absurd. I tell you, there is no world. You must begin to act as if this is true. You must let go of the belief that you are at the mercy of the world's rules and laws. Expect only good and you will see only good. Yeah, now they're back on track, right? No, that's not what, that's not what's being said. Expect only good and you will see only good. This does not mean all outcomes will be in the character's favor. Rather, know that all you see and hear and feel is perfect, as it is the perfect expression of the creative process that you are. And I don't like what I see and I feel and I hear, and I don't want to accept it as perfect. It doesn't seem perfect to me. Know that all that you see and hear and feel is perfect, as it is the perfect expression of the creative process that you are. I want it to be different. And I think this is all wrapped up with this belief that if I can just get it right, if I can just figure out that perfect formula, then everything will snap into place. Yeah, Anne's agreeing. Yeah, just now I got it. That was all I needed, was that one last quarter turn, right? In fact, I've been contemplating what I'm going to teach this Sunday. I'm going a week early because I'm going on vacation next week, back to visit family. And the one of the titles, and I don't know if this is what I'm going to teach on or not. I have no friggin' clue. One of the things that has occurred to me is the name of a TED Talk that I saw. And then, in fact, the woman who did the TED Talk wrote a book that I downloaded recently. It's called What If There's Nothing Wrong With You? And I think it extends to not just me. It's a good place to start, but not just me. What if there's nothing wrong? You know, and again, this is what we've been looking at for a long time now, but what we've been looking at the past week in general healing. What if there is no problem? What if nothing needs to change? Nothing. Nothing. Not me, not my habits, not the parents who murder their children. What if nothing needs to change? You know, you don't wake up from a dream in the morning and go, oh my God, that was awful. I'll do better tonight. You don't. You go, oh yeah, okay. Yeah, boy, was that weird. That was a weird dream. And so it's not a way of approaching this dream as a get out of jail free card. Whew. I don't have to take responsibility for that. It's just a different way. It seems to me it's a different way of it really is embracing what we came here to experience. And this is what we talked about in this week in general healing, 2 Timothy. You know, it's a matter of, I don't know. It all sounds so trite to say out loud. You know, I'm trying out different ways of saying it in my mind. I'm like, yeah, right. You know, loving what is, embracing what is, allowing all things to be as they are, knowing that there's nothing wrong here. I mean, these are the, I could go on for an hour just saying those different types of phrases. We've heard them all. Yeah, that really is the task. Yeah, there are no words, George says. It's not about exclusion. And I don't know what that means. But I know it. I know it in my bones. that it can't be about exclusion. It can't be about, you know, NTI talks about it in terms of judgment, you know, and it's not like, oh, I'm better than you judgment, although that's part of it. But it's like, that's good, that's bad, that's good, that's bad. We can allow this, we're not going to allow that. That's the kind of judgment that keeps the whole thing turning. Know that all you see and hear and feel is perfect, as it is the perfect expression of the creative process that you are. And I got to tell you, when I read that line, I'm like, well, I don't want to be part of that. You know, it's again, it's looking at God as some bearded man in the sky. It's like, how can you let this suffering exist? Of course, the joke is God turns back and goes, how can you? What is here now if there are no problems to solve? Amen. Lot Kelly. Dawn, I couldn't think of your name. Dawn is quoting Lot Kelly. What is here now if there are no problems to solve? And I remember when I interviewed Locke for that set song we had a long time ago, that I was really taken with that. Really taken with that. What is here now if there are no problems to solve? and the problem is part of me wants to look out and go, what do you mean there's no problems? Look at these events in the world. And then as I say it, I'm reminded of the pendulum swing from the Tao Te Ching, right? I'm going to go out there, I'm going to solve these problems, and that's going to push that pendulum. It's going to, you know, it keeps it rocking. It's the opposite of embracing it and going, wow, look at this. Look at what we are creating. Not y'all suck because we're creating this, right? So there's an embrace. And I know that I teach what I would learn. So I'm going to be exploring this embrace. I don't know how to do it. I was listening to Jeff Foster this morning, and he was talking about, because the words came in my mind that I have heard him say, from depressed to deep rest. So I can look at the events of the world around me and be depressed, or I can just rest. I can really see that as an invitation to just rest. And again, I don't really know how that's done, but I'm willing to explore it. So let me read to you my contemplation of Regina's guidance with her last and final dream. Here's what I said about it. I don't know what it says, but we'll see. On guidance, Regina's story of the house in La Vida is compelling. It makes me look again at the idea that I know what guidance is. I see that I have often looked at the events of the world as some kind of guide to help me see what I am to see and do. When contemplating the story, I heard, you do not know what guidance is. You continue to follow the ego's plan for salvation. Is this true? Don't tell me that. Give me something to hang on to here. Here's the response. What you are to see, I will tell you. This phenomenon you point to, synchronicity, to want something all your life and then to have somebody come up out of the blue and offer it to you for free on a silver platter. Synchronicity. This phenomenon you point to, synchronicity, is actually still looking upon the world seen by the body's eyes to give you direction. As Regina said, the task is to ask within when you would identify some event or happening as guidance. I see that this scares you. Your fear can only come from disidentification with your true self. How could you not receive answer when it is but yourself you ask? Yeah, and that issue has been coming up again and again. I talked about that last night in gentle healing. You know, fundamentally it's that fear that the truth is not true. Yeah, and Don says, oh, I see, it's like still looking outside of you for guidance, confirmation. Yeah, it's looking outside that's the problem. Yeah, that's the issue. but this, yeah, so this issue about seeking guidance and not receiving it, the fear that I'll seek guidance and won't receive it, that I'll look within and won't hear anything. It's pretty fundamental. It's one of those basements that we talk about with self-inquiry. It's the fear that the truth is not true, that I'm making all this up, that synchronicities that I've experienced as a result of turning to guidance, that's not proof of anything. You know, it's the same thing that we talked about. It's the same thing that Anne opened with in her poem. You know, I want to take this nice thing and this nice thing and this nice thing and go, see? See what a good spiritual student I am? See that, you know, but there's something deep within me that still believes that I'm just cobbling it all together, that I'm picking and choosing these little bits of data fed to me. To try and ward off the truth that there is no meaning. That I'm this tiny little creature who really is at the mercy of the, I feel bad about this. This does not feel very helpful. This is like, wah, wah. So I apologize for that. But I see that's really the, you know, that's the fear that's still there. And as Inner Wisdom says, I see this scares you. Your fear can only come from disidentification, which, I like that, disidentification. Your fear can only come from disidentification with your true self. It's like, that's what's true. And in order to believe all that crap, I have to extract myself from that. Your fear can only come from disidentification with your true self. How could you not receive an answer when it is but yourself you ask? There is no reason for fear. All will be used in accordance with my plan. Remember to check within. It really is that simple. Remember to check within. It really is that simple. You know, I don't have to hold my exactly right. You know, whatever I do to, you know, not again, I'm not trying to please some foreign entity. Tressa says, if you knew who walks beside you on the path that you have chosen, fear would be impossible. There is no reason to fear. All will be used in accordance with my plan. Remember to check within. It really is that simple. Trust and faith in self. Trust and faith in self, of course, with a capital S. Trust and faith in self are the important guides for you, not the world. Remember, there is no world. Hey, Reggie. And sweet little dog sitting in her lap. Trust and faith in self are the important guides for you, not the world. Remember, there is no world. There are only the thoughts in your mind. And if you become confused about this, remember your creative ability. You can create that which you choose to create. There is no other source of your experience. Thus, your dreams and wishes can manifest in form in seemingly miraculous ways. This is not the sine qua non of guidance. I don't know why that word, I don't even know if it fits, but it was in my brain, so I wrote it down, or whatever, in my something, so I wrote it down. This is not the sine qua non of guidance. And then, of course, I looked that up. Yeah, what does that mean? I'm going to get ready to tell you. It says an essential condition, a thing that is absolutely necessary. And I think maybe, I don't know, who am I to say what a better word would be, but it's the idea is it's not a hallmark. It's not a signpost going, you did good. Right? This is not the hallmark of guidance, confirmation of what you wish to believe. These signs and symbols are merely testament to the creative power that you are. That's what they're proof of. Not proof that, yay, I'm following guidance. Not proof of I'm on the right path. Signs and these signs and symbols, this phenomena of synchronicity, are merely testament to the creative power that you are. If your one goal is to know truth, you must always, always, always ask what your guidance is in the moment. If your goal is to know truth, you must always, always, always ask what your guidance is in the moment rather than assuming you know based on the signs and symbols, reading the tea leaves, as it were, of what you see in the world. This is because, as your lesson says, there is no world. Only there is the reflection of your mind. This reflection necessarily includes dreams, wishes, hopes, plans. These are not salvation. These will never save you. Only clarity of purpose, a single, unified wish to know the truth can guide you. Trust that clarity is you. For it is. Only clarity of purpose, a single unified wish to know the truth can guide you. Trust that clarity is you, for it is. I don't know what to say about that. I feel to say about that. That's a bizarre sentence, frankly. I mean, it resonates. But trust that clarity is you. Only clarity of purpose, a single unified wish to know the truth can guide you. Trust that clarity is you, for it is. So what comes in the mind is we talk about, knowing myself and knowing the truth. And we, I, maybe all of us, I don't know, seem to use that interchangeably. And I can see how that relates back to this, what we were just talking about, you know, still looking outside, as if it should lead, as if it should tell me which way to turn, which way to go, anything outside of me, good, bad, or indifferent. And that's not where it's found. The clarity is is found within. So in trusting, I mean, daggone it, frankly, that sentence says the truth is true. It says trust yourself, you know. Just let it be and trust yourself. And you all have often heard me use that quote from the movie. I've been long enamored of it, from the movie The Matrix, where Neo says, "Oh, before I knew that the world wasn't real, I used to eat noodles over there. They had really good noodles. What does that tell you?" And Trinity says, "It tells you that the Matrix cannot tell you who you are." Trust the clarity that I am seeking. Oh, shoot. Stop it. It's a smoke alarm that decided to beep for no reason. Trust that the clarity. Is found within, is found in stillness, is found in silence, because the clarity is what I am. So, what does it tell me that the smoke alarm beeps when I'm in the middle of some profound thought? It tells me that the Matrix cannot tell me who I am. Oh, gosh. Ah, me. And then the final sentence in that guidance says, "Blessings upon you as you walk this path with your heart, which is the truth that will set you free." So I want to, I want to take a minute here and talk about, let me close that door, at least dampen that sound. I want to talk a moment about spiritual aspiration. So, you know, I'm doing gentle healing year one, and I'm encouraging my students, whatever, people who come to the class, to dig deep and identify their spiritual aspirations, right? And Regina talks about it. Apparently, Shauna talked about it eloquently on Sunday, which I missed, although I heard a very strong prompt to go listen to her. I didn't. I was in the middle of something. I didn't stop and do it. Okay, I'm laughing because, so I've been struggling with it a little bit. And I'm laughing because I opened up my journal to see what I wrote about spiritual my spiritual aspiration. I see last night I wrote, "I'm asking, what is my GD spiritual aspiration?" We want the world and we want it now, right? Yeah, and frankly, I find that when you scream it, inner wisdom, it's not very responsive. I thought that was what I was going to talk about. And I had some, when I first read it, I had, and I was telling the group about it last night, I had some really sweet little thing come up, but that wasn't really it. And then I heard, you know, remember the truth in every moment. Well, isn't that sweet? But you know, I mean, it is, it's nice. And if it's your spiritual aspiration, good for you. But I don't really think it, you know, I don't think it will serve as that divining rod for me. You know, the thing that my measuring stick, the thing that brings me back to sanity in moments of temptation to be insane. And then it felt like the next time I really looked, it felt like it was, let go of the belief in unworthiness, which is up But I don't know how that is, Franklin, for a spiritual aspiration. It certainly resonated when it came in. Anyway, so we're still working with it this week, and I'll get back to you all on on how that's going. But I tell you what I'm going to do now. I got about 6 minutes left. I'm going to read this other thing that I flipped to as I was looking at spiritual aspiration. I'm going to read it. I see the recurring belief in guilt. I sat down and made a long list of things I feel guilty for. Some of those, and I got to tell you, I am digging at this. It's like picking a scab, right? I'm digging at this I am bad belief. I mean, so when I said to let go of the belief in unworthiness, I mean it. I am so sick of carrying that around. I am so sick of carrying that around. It's debilitating. I'm over it. So the guidance came in to make a list, and man, it was a long list, from stuff when Josh was a kid to, you know, stuff that happened 20 minutes before I made the list. you know, anyway, so I see the recurring belief in guilt. I sat down and made a long list of things I feel guilty for. Some of those are old recurring issues, but most of them are from the last couple of days, seemingly minor things, but clearly thoughts that tell me I'm just not good enough. I will never get this right. I'm a fake, etc. This listing of things I am guilty for seemed to come in response to an inner prompt when I asked for help in letting go of the I am bad belief. Father, what would you have me see or do? You know it is my true desire to release the I am bad belief. The response, it would be helpful for you to ask, as we have discussed in the past, at each available juncture, what am I to do now? And then do it. In this way, no new guilt feelings are generated. This is interesting. You are sure enough about the truth of inner guidance that you will see you need merely do what your heart tells you to do. In fact, this is all you are capable of doing. You always follow your heart's desire. Thus, what is required is for you to become conscious of what you are truly desiring. Is your motive consistent with your desire? To find conflicting values is not to become another source for guilt. This is the non-judgmental looking we have been discussing. Hear me well. Your desires do not make you guilty. Suffering, however, comes merely from having mixed desires or a split mind. Asking what your desires are takes deep looking and a commitment to be honest with yourself. If you find a desire there, pursue it. If you find something that you think will make you happy, do not be afraid to test that theory. Otherwise, you will always feel as if you are making a sacrifice to a god, a goal, a desire you don't truly desire with all your heart. There is no shame in wanting things in the world. This is why you came, to see what these seeming forms would feel like, so feel them. By repressing your desire for something other than the truth, you keep yourself in bondage to a lie. The lie is that you want something other than truth. How can you know that that is a lie unless you allow yourself to think it, to explore it, to entertain it as a possibility? Here's the lie I was telling as I wrote this. What would it feel like to have no obligations? First, let's be clear that that is impossible. You will always be led to some extent by your seeming obligations. But allow yourself to imagine what it would be like if there was nothing in the world that needed to be done by you. This is, by the way, the same exercise as what would you be doing if you only had 6 months to live? The question is, what is your true desire? What would that look like? And I know what I've done today is throw up a bunch of questions with very little, but I think that's a good question. This was before I wrote, you know, I don't know what the heck I'd do. If I had 6 months to live, I hate everything. There's more that I won't repeat here. and I know I pushed right up against the ending time of this program. But I think that it's just excellent advice. I mean, because I can tell myself, oh, I want to move home, or oh, you know, and all of that's crap. It's all crap. None of that's true desire. But unless I, you know, and Anne was talking about this while ago in her program, you know, it's like, no, I know that's not true, so let me just push it out of the way. That's not looking at it. That's not being with it. That's not, you know, that doesn't allow me to explore my true desire. Because I'm quickly believing and repressing the other things that cloud my clarity. So I'm out of time. I don't. I just mean for this program. I plan to be back tomorrow or the next day or the next. But you know, anyway, thank you all for listening. I love you. I love you dearly. Thank you so much.